Now you'll remember that in last month's edition, Christine Ward brought us a recording of John Wilkinson telling us about the First World War, with particular reference to his father's involvement in it. We're now going to hear him tell us a little bit about the research he did.
After my father died in 1975, I decided I'd perhaps do a little bit of research into the First World War. So I got in touch with the headquarters of the Duke of Wellington's regiment in Halifax, and they sent me a load of information, including descriptions of the Battle of Bullecourt and trench maps and so on, and the account of all the actions that the unit had been in during the war. Anyway, the result of that was that some years later I went to Bullecourt myself, and with the aid of the trench map I was able to sort of pinpoint the position where my father's trenches had been and where he'd gone over the top. And, you know, looking across, it was only something like 200 yards or so of ground to the first of the German trenches in front of the village. Bullecourt's a hill village, and it's quite a sensation to, you know, on a beautiful sunny morning, looking across at a nice village like that, to think what it would be like at 4 o'clock in the morning with a creeping artillery barrage creating clouds of dust so that the troops couldn't in fact see anything, and a lot of them got lost on the way across no man's land. It's just very, very difficult. And the other point was that we went above the village up onto the crest of the ridge, which was the highest point that the Australians got to, and there was a rather fine Australian memorial up there. And indeed, the Australians are so impressed with the performance of their troops at Bullecourt that every year on Anzac Day, that's the 25th of April, there's always a delegation of Australians, including the ambassador and people from the Australian Army and relatives and so on. They go to Bullecourt every year. And in fact, many years later, when I was in Canberra in Australia, I went to the Australian National Army Museum. And there's a large-scale model of the Battle of Bullecourt, which depicts the Australians' assault on the trenches.
But it's one we've never heard of. It's a battle we've never heard of.
I know. I mean, and the other thing was, you know, mentioning this sort of stately home that my father was convalescing in, Tombonin Mansion in the park, which of course is now no more, which was the Fielding's summer residence, as it were. That, during the 1418 war, that was used as a convalescent home. And it was interesting that when I went to do postgraduate work in Edinburgh University, 1949, my mother wrote to a friend that she'd had, who, in fact, during the First World War, had served as a nurse in that house in the park. And after the war, she married the Scottish soldier that she was nursing. And, in fact, I lodged with them in Edinburgh for 4 years. Jim Smith, who was a tremendous character, and he'd been wounded at the Battle of Loos in 1915, and he reckoned that Loos was the worst experience of the war. He went through the Somme and every other battle, but Loos was the worst one. Of course, that's when the British first used gas, after the Germans had used it previously at Ypres. They used gas, and of course the wind was such that it actually blew the gas back onto the British trenches, so there was horrific casualties there. But Loos was a dreadful battle. Again, another one a bit like Bullecourt, where there was tremendous loss of life for no gain whatsoever. Bullecourt actually was captured by the British 21st of May, and they stayed in the village until the German offensive in March 1918, which actually drove the British back as far as Amiens. And that's when my father probably had that encounter with the tank. Of course, the Germans had built a few tanks in those days.
With armour plating?
Yeah, with armour plating.
Armour plating.
Yeah.
John, why did he have to go to Halifax? You said the Tombonin pals all went to Rochdale and Manchester, didn't they?
Yes, well, they were in the pre-war territorials, and they were, of course, all volunteers. By the end of 1915, conscription was coming in. And men of a certain age, I think up to the age of 40-odd or whatever it was, were conscripted. They were enrolled in their local regiments, which in our region, of course, it was the West Riding of Yorkshire, so they'd go into the Yorkshire regiments, which were the West Riding Regiment, that's the Duke of Wellington's, or the West Yorkshire Regiment, or the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, or the Yorkshire and Lancashire Regiment. They were all the Yorkshire regiments, but quite a few, of course, still went into the Lancashire Fusiliers. In fact, carved names in Tomerin Garden of Remembrance, the Lancashire Fusiliers are the most, well, the biggest casualty rate. There's something like about getting on for about 25% of the deaths amongst Tomerin men were in the Lancashire Fusiliers.
So what was your dad doing as a job when he was conscripted?
Oh, he was a painter and decorator, yes.
Yes.
Working with his father in Springside.
Presumably, having ideas of just settling down and...
Yeah. Yes, well, as I say, he was considering marriage, but put it off until he survived the war. Got married, I think, in 1920.
Very difficult, because there are a lot of people who didn't. Did you say that it was one in eight?
One in eight. One in eight were killed. And it was even higher in higher proportion in the Australian Army. It was the highest proportion of the whole British Army. The Australians, they took a tremendous hammering because they were such good troops.
This led to quite a lot of inquiries, didn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was, basically it was one country's troops being commanded by another country's generals. And the Australians wore that for a while, but after the inept performance, particularly at Bully Court, the Australians reared up on the British government, and they got the Australians to be generalled by their own man, General Monash.
I just remember when I was growing up, there were a huge number of single ladies.
Yes.
Yes. All teachers were single.
Yes.
They never married.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Because there were no men to marry.
No.
The same at Gawthorpe, where I volunteered.
Yes.
You know, that's...
Yes.
Same thing happened. Dreadful, dreadful times. John, thank you very much for telling us all
about
it.
Oh, that's all right.
Thank you. Yeah. That's very interesting.